Hello, I'm Matthew, and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 12th of August, 2026.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD. Simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Matthew, Muhammad, Helen, Mina, Peter, Simon, and of course not forgetting Roger. In this week's edition, we have all the latest from Beacon with Helen and Muhammad, as some fascinating news and nostalgia from across the Black Country. You'll have to be sharp of mind, as we also have another Did You Know segment from Roger and quiz with Mina. As we continue to bask in the sunny climes of Costa del Black Country, is there any rain on the horizon? We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. With the domestic football season up and running again, we have all the latest news from the weekend's action for Wolves and West Brom. And with thanks to TNF Soundings contributor Liz, we have episode 1 of a 3-part series about one of our greatest ever storytellers, which for many is thought as one of the greatest adventure stories ever written. Can you recall who this may be? Local news to start though, with me, Matthew and Peter. The recommissioning of Wolverhampton's Shared Lives service has been welcomed by carers, service users, and partners who say it transforms lives by providing personalised support in a family environment. Earlier this month, the City of Wolverhampton Council announced that Camphill Village Trust had been awarded a new contract to continue delivering Shared Lives across the city for the next 2 to 4 years. Shared Lives supports adults and young people aged 16 and over who need care and support by carefully matching them with trained carers who welcome them into their homes and family life. The service can provide long-term living arrangements, short breaks, day support, and other flexible care options, and is open to care leavers and young people moving into adult services, older adults, and people with learning disabilities, autism, mental health needs, or physical or sensory impairments. Kate Morgan, Head of Service and Registered Manager for Shared Lives at Camphill Village Trust, said the service offers people the opportunity to receive highly personalised support while becoming part of a family and community. She said, "Shared Lives is similar to foster care, but we work with adults, supporting them to live as part of a family, either on a long-term basis where somebody is matched and moves in with a Shared Lives carer, or for short breaks, which gives them the opportunity of enjoying respite with a family. With Shared Lives, the individual is matched with their Shared Lives carer, which means that the carer and the person get to know each other really well. They get to know their skills, their interests, their hobbies, their likes, and their dislikes, just like normal families. And people really thrive having that one-to-one personalised support. We have been recommissioned to provide Shared Lives, and we are really happy to be working in partnership with the City of Wolverhampton Council to continue to build up the service and to make it even bigger and better." Among those welcoming the recommissioning is Shared Lives carer Faye Downs, who has supported people through fostering, and more recently, shared lives for more than two decades. Faye and her husband Mick first fostered Shane Jarvis when he was 10 years old, and through shared lives, continue to support him as an adult. Faye said, "Moving into shared lives was a natural step for us. Shane had already become part of our family and has fitted in from day one. We've loved having him with us and watching him grow into the young man he is today. Seeing the progress he has made over the years makes us incredibly proud." Shane welcomed the continuation of the service and reflected on the positive impact it has had on his life. He said, "Since living with Faye and Mick, my life has been really good. Shared lives helps people who might find it difficult to manage on their own. Having that support means I can take part in activities, look at future job opportunities, and do more things independently." Faye added, "Shane has a learning disability, so we support him with day-to-day life and help him access activities and opportunities that interest him. We've had a lot of support from the council as well, helping him explore different roles and build confidence for the future. Shared lives gives people the chance to be part of a family while still receiving the support they need, and that's what makes it so special." Councillor Linda Leach, Cabinet Member for Adult Services, said, "Shared lives is a fantastic and unique way of supporting people who need care and support. It gives people the opportunity to become part of a family environment while receiving personalized support that meets their individual needs. Whether that's through long-term arrangements, short breaks, or day visits, I'm delighted that this service will continue to benefit Wolverhampton residents." The council and Camp Hill Village Trust hope to expand the service over the coming years by recruiting more shared lives carers and increasing awareness of the support available.
A charity is appealing to people to donate back-to-school items for children affected by domestic abuse. The Haven, Wolverhampton, said its scheme provided essentials, highlighting backpacks, water bottles, stationery, and an Asda voucher towards a uniform. A year ago, 70 bags of items were given to people helped by the charity, which supports women and children affected by domestic abuse, as part of its back-to-school appeal. The Haven, who confirmed the final drop-off date this year was the 19th of August, said by providing products, children would feel more confident, and it takes a financial burden away from mothers who often have very little to survive on. Pamela in Beckley, from the charity, said many people fleeing domestic abuse did not get an opportunity to pack, with some women leaving everything behind. The victim is the one who has been uprooted. The perpetrator gets to stay where they are, she said. The Haven's lived experience lead, who engages with women helped by the charity, said that when people dealt with upheaval, they need help with everything. A mother may not be able to go to work, and items could present a financial challenge, she explained. You want children to feel a sense of belonging at school, that they're not lacking anything and can go ready to learn. The appeal initiative was giving children one less thing to think about, she added. You'd be surprised how excited a child can get about a new water bottle. These little things can make such a huge difference. Beckley, who has been involved with the charity for 6 years, said that starting over again created an enormous emotional pressure on so many levels for people. It's disruptive for some of the children, especially if it's a new school. It can bring additional anxiety. And in addition, the majority of children helped by the charity were youngsters who have witnessed mom getting abused by dad, she said. We're seeing lots of challenging behaviour, complex needs with children, added Beckley. In the year between April 2024 and March 2025, the charity had 1,800 people who either came to the organisation themselves or were referred to it by other agencies. And the majority of referrals were through the Haven's free helpline, Beckley said. A contract from the council, which emerged in May, includes the return of the authority's sanctuary scheme. which aims to see improved security measures available to victims, including CCTV and fireproof letterboxes. And the Haven have been recommissioned to provide safe accommodation and community support services under a 3-year minimum contract.
Up next, we have the Beacon update brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, it's Mo from Beacon with your latest updates. We'll start this week off with a reminder about a really helpful event taking place here at Beacon. On Wednesday, the 12th of August, from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m, we'll be welcoming Jennings Funeral Directors and Talbot's Law to Beacon. Jennings Funeral Directors will be here to answer questions and offer friendly, practical guidance in a relaxed, no obligation setting. They'll be joined by a member of the trust and estates team at Talbot's Law, who will be on hand to offer advice and guidance on preparing wills, lasting powers of attorney, court of protection applications, leaving legacies in wills, and estate planning. It's a great opportunity to ask questions, find out more, and get some helpful guidance, all in an informal setting. So if you think you or one of your family members could benefit, please come along to Beacon between 2 and 5 p.m. on Wednesday. Next up, we're looking forward to welcoming Worcester Cricket Foundation back to Beacon for another fantastic inclusive SEND session. The session takes place on Thursday the 13th of August from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. and is open to children and young people living with disabilities and their families. It's all about having fun, building confidence, and enjoying accessible activities together in a welcoming and supportive space. The session is completely free, but booking is required. To book on, please call 019-02-880-111 or by emailing us using the email inquiries@beaconvision.org. We can't wait to welcome everyone for an hour of inclusive sport, movement, and plenty of smiles. And while we're talking about making a difference, we've got another part of our What's Your Legacy campaign to tell you about. If you're browsing for your next great read in one of our Beacon charity shops this August, you may find one of our free Beacon bookmarks tucked inside a selected book. Each bookmark carries a simple message and a gentle invitation to think about the legacy we leave behind. Throughout August, we're celebrating the many ways that people create a lasting impact, whether that's through kindness, volunteering, supporting others, or planning for the future. So why not pop in to your local Beacon charity shop, pick up a new book, and see if you discover one of our special bookmarks. It might just inspire a conversation about the legacy you'd like to leave behind. Every story leaves a legacy. What's yours? We'd also like to say a very quick thank you to everyone who came along to our technology demonstration drop-in. We hope you enjoyed the chance to try out some of the latest assistive technology, including Meta glasses, video magnifiers, and accessible smartphones. A big thank you to everyone who joined us and our team for demonstrating the technology, answering questions, and helping people discover how technology can make everyday life a little easier. And finally this week, we've got some exciting live music coming up here at Beacon. On Wednesday the 12th of August at 1:30 p.m, we'll be welcoming Rahul Gadgil, sorry if I've mispronounced that, to the Centre for a live performance, Rahul is a visually impaired pianist, keyboardist, composer, and arranger, and he plays a fantastic range of instruments, including keyboard, flute, melodica, and aerophone. We're really excited and looking forward to welcoming Rahul and enjoying the live music. So if you're joining us, we hope you have a wonderful time. That's all from me this week. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time on the Beacon Update.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news.
Boxing fans are being urged to act fast, as tickets for Dudley's biggest charity fight night are selling quickly ahead of this month's blockbuster showdown at Dudley Town Hall. On the 21st of August, Dudley Council leader Councillor Patrick Harley will step into the ring against former Councillor Shah Salim in a charity bout that will raise money for the charity supported by both current Mayor Councillor Pete Lowe and former Mayor Councillor Pete Lee. The pair will go head-to-head over 8 one-minute rounds in front of what is expected to be a packed crowd, topping a fight card featuring talented local boxers from across the borough. With 8 bouts scheduled, evening promises plenty of action while supporting worthy causes. Organisers hope to raise £30,000 through the event. VIP tickets offering ringside seating, food and access to an after-show party at nearby Fun City have proved particularly popular, and organisers are encouraging people to secure their places while tickets remain available. Many local businesses have already offered their support in sponsorship, including Brindley Capital and S&R Construction as platinum sponsors, and Dudley Motors, Thomas Dudley and IPL Schuler as gold sponsors, with additional backing from GMB Union. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council and one of the night's main event fighters, said, "It's not every day you see someone pushing 60 stepping through the ropes for a boxing match, but this is all for a fantastic cause. The training's been tough, but I'm looking forward to the challenge and helping put on a great show for everyone who comes along. Most importantly, we're hoping to raise a significant amount of money for the Mayor's charities and those supported by former Mayor Councillor Pete Lee. Every ticket sold will help support organisations doing invaluable work across our borough, so I'd encourage people to get theirs before it's too late." Councillor Pete Lowe, Mayor of Dudley, said, "This promises to be a fantastic night of entertainment, bringing people together to support a range of incredible charities that make a real difference to communities across our borough. Whether you're coming along for the boxing to support Patrick and Shaz, or simply to help raise money for good causes, I would encourage people to get their tickets now and be part of what should be a busting evening." Councillor Pete Lowe's mayoral charities include We Love Carers, Friends of Alfie Johnson, Starbridge Town FC's Floodlight Appeal, Gig Caritas Busking for Charity, the Watt Centre, Starbridge Glass Museum and Brawley Hill Baby Bank, amongst others. Proceeds from the boxing event will be shared between charities supported by both Councillor Lowe and former Mayor Councillor Pete Lee. Tickets are available through Dudley Borough Halls at www.boroughhalls.co.uk/watch-on.html. But with growing interest and limited capacity, organisers are urging anyone planning to attend not to leave it until the final bell. Boxing is a sport that can involve blows to the head and face, so sensible eye safety matters, both in and out of the ring. And while we're on the subject of protecting and caring for our eyes, it's time now to head a little further afield and north of the border to find out why using a massage gun on our eyes, no matter how tired they may feel, is definitely not such a good idea. Edinburgh clinicians have described their treatment of a man who experienced retinal bruising after using a massage gun to relieve tired eyes. Clinicians from Princess Alexandra Eye Pavilion have cautioned against improper use of massage guns following their treatment of a patient who experienced retinal tears after using the device on his eyes. Writing in BMJ Case Reports, the author shared that a student in his 20s presented with a six-day history of floaters and occasional flashing lights in his right eye. While his visual acuity was 6-6 in both eyes, an indental scleral examination revealed retinal bruising in both eyes. In his right eye, he had multiple retinal tears and superior temporal retinal dialysis. In the patient's left eye, the clinician found 6 small horseshoe tears. Further questioning revealed that the patient had been using a percussive massage gun around and directly on his eyes to relieve tiredness. Patient told clinicians that he had been using the massage gun in this manner for several minutes at a time on a weekly basis for the past 3 months. He reported being unaware of any warnings in the massage gun operating instructions against ocular use. Both eyes were successfully treated with retinal laser, with barrier laser used to treat the right superior temporal retinal dialysis. The clinicians highlighted that massage guns are growing in popularity, but there is limited public awareness of the risks of improper use. This rare presentation highlights the potential for significant retinal injury. It also underscores the need for cautious massage gun use, careful history taking in unexpected clinical scenarios, and clear manufacturer's warning against improper application, the authors shared.
Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition brought to us by Mina.
Hello and welcome to this week's flashback quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, these are your questions. Here we go. Question 1. In what year was the first film shown to a proper audience? Question 2. What was the popular name for Zoetrope machine? Question 3. Where could you see a Zoetrope? Question 4. Name another popular movie title used by families. Question 5. What was the title of the first talking picture? And finally, question 6. What does CGI stand for? I will be back later with the answers, but for now, best of luck!
Cheers for those questions, Mina. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
Before we look ahead to a new football season filled with hope and expectation, Wolverhampton is pausing to remember one of its greatest sporting sons. The city is mourning the death of former Wolverhampton Wanderers goalkeeper Phil Parks, affectionately known to supporters as Lofty, who has passed away at the age of 79. A giant figure in every sense, both in stature and in his contribution to the club, Parks was admired for his commanding presence, remarkable consistency, and unwavering commitment to the gold and black shirt. For many Wolves fans, Lofty was more than just a goalkeeper. He was a hero, a symbol of an era, and a player whose legacy will continue to live on in the memories of generations. Our thoughts are with his family, friends, and all those across the football community who are mourning his loss. Back on the pitch, and Wolves and West Brom both used the Carabao Cup opening weekend to make confident early statements before the Championship campaign gets underway. For Wolves, a 3-0 win over Port Vale at Molineux offered a useful first glimpse of life back in the second tier, with Adam Armstrong opening the scoring after 14 minutes, Andre doubling the lead on 34 minutes, and Fer Lopez rounding things off just before half-time. A clean sheet, three goals, and a sense that the home crowd had something to get behind again made it exactly the sort of professional start they needed before the league opener against Blackburn Rovers under the Friday night lights. Albion were even more emphatic, sweeping past Rotherham United 4-1 at the New York Stadium. Jimmy J. Morgan marked his debut with two goals, Harry Whitwell also struck, and Felix Hormeyer added another after the break, as the Baggies showed the sharpness and ruthlessness expected of a side aiming to start fast. Rotherham's late consolation did little to spoil what was a polished and encouraging event for James Morrison's team. Attention now turns quickly to the Championship. Wolves begin at Molineux against Blackburn Rovers on Friday night, August the 14th. A fixture that should reveal plenty about their promotion credentials and how quickly the squad can adapt to different pressure. Albion start the following day away at Norwich City, one of the division's trickier opening assignments, before returning to the Hawthorns to face Burnley. After a lively cup curtain raiser, both Black Country clubs have given supporters reason to believe the league season could begin with real momentum. And that leads us nicely into our next track from Angela, who's here to remind us all about the Talking News Football Fan Zone. If you follow Wolves, Albion or any other local team, we'd love you to get involved, share your views and be part of the conversation.
Here's something of special interest if you were a fan of Wolves or West Brom. Well, with the new football season fast approaching, our Talking News service would like to hear from you. In an exciting new development to the weekly football roundup, our Fan Zone feature will give you the opportunity to leave your thoughts, opinions and reaction to all the action from the weekend, making you the stars of the show. So, whether you are part of the Wolves pack, a boing boing baggy, or just a fervent follower of the beautiful game, if you'd like to be one of our prize pundits, then please do get in touch to register your interest. You can call, drop a text message, or leave a WhatsApp voice note with your name and who you support with our Talking News team on 07849 802 703. We can't wait to hear from you. It's going to be truly phenomenal. Up next, it's trivia time, brought to us by Flashback Roger and his Did You Know feature. Take it away, Roger.
Hello again, everyone. I hope that you're all keeping as well as you can do this week. Well, just lately, I've been watching old films on the Movie Channel, and it got me thinking about the advent of cinematography. That's a big word for me to come up with, isn't it? Anyway, road up. Pin back your lug holes and have a listen and sit up straight. Now then, did you know that? The very first moving picture ever shown to a proper audience was that made by Louis Le Prince in 1888. It's called The Round Hay Garden Scene. It was made in his garden in Leeds, and showed his family walking in the garden around the house. Sadly, Louis died just 10 days after it was made. There were other ways to see moving pictures in the form of zoetrope machines, known often as what the butler saw or peep show machines. The individual viewer could pay a coin into a slot, look through the lens and turn a handle, and would see a flickering scene, often of a saucy nature. They would be found on seaside piers and the like at the turn of the 19th century. And magic lanterns were also a popular household toy and entertainment. Families could sit around the table and view various scenes, usually of galloping horses, acrobats, jugglers, or circus acts, or appearing through slots made in a revolving drum. The images inside the drum had the appearance of moving over and over again. And then the development of celluloid or plastic type flexible film made it possible to roll the film and make longer features. Film came in various widths, originally 8mm, then 16mm, 35mm, and latterly 75mm widths. When sound was added to the film itself, then the silent movie era was over. Talkies appeared when in 1927 the jazz singer, starring Al Jolson, wowed audiences. The majority of films were made in black and white because while colour film had been invented, it was much too costly to be a viable medium. Some black and white films were hand-tinted by frame. What a laborious process. These films were called coloured as opposed to a colour film to differentiate. These days, though, movies are recorded digitally using computers that can do a host of tasks and effects. Computer graphic imagery, or CGI, is commonplace now, creating scenes and characters that appear totally real. In a TV Galaxy chocolate advert, which appears to feature Audrey Hepburn, it's actually and unbelievably entirely made using CGI. But not a human being is in sight. What do you think about that? I think it's amazing stuff. And I take it certainly is. But it really is still a magic lantern after all. Ah well, back to sorting through some more old uns. I'll get me an ice cream and enjoy another evening at the flicks. So till next week then, I'll say bye for now. Ta-ra a bit. Ta-ra.
Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us. Brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. This time we're looking at the weather across the Black Country from Friday 14th of August through to Thursday 20th of August. And the week starts warm and mostly settled before turning a little fresher and more changeable later on. Friday looks like a bright and fairly warm day with plenty of sunny spells and temperatures reaching around 26 to 29 degrees, depending on just how much sunshine breaks through. Rain risk looks low, so it should be a useful day for getting out and about, whether you're heading into Wolverhampton, popping to Dudley, or just making the most of the garden before the weather remembers it's in the West Midlands. Sunrise will be around 5:48 a.m. with sunset close to 8:37 p.m. So there's still a good chance of stretch of evening light, ideal for a gentle stroll, a bit of watering, or a Boston sit-down cup of tea. Saturday should stay mostly dry, though it may be a little cloudier at times. Temperatures are likely to sit somewhere between 23 and 26 degrees, so still warm enough to feel summery, but perhaps not quite as full-on as the hottest days of the previous week. It's the sort of day where the clouds may loiter around like someone waiting for a bus at Dudley Street, but they shouldn't cause too much trouble. Sunrise on Saturday is around 5:50 a.m. with sunset just after 8:35 p.m. UV levels look moderate for much of the period, and on the sunnier days, they may feel stronger than expected. So if you're outside for a while, it's still worth using the sun cream, a hat and sunglasses, or wraparound filter glasses with proper UV protection, especially when the sun is doing its best impression of heat lamp over the Black Country Museum. Sunday looks a little more mixed with sunny intervals and a bit more cloud around temperatures should be around 22 to 24 degrees with only a small chance of a shower. Many places should get away with a mainly dry day, though it may be one to keep an eye on the sky and the other eye on the washing line. Sunrise is around 5:52 a.m. with sunset edging back to around 8:33 p.m. Monday should remain pleasant and usable with bright spells, some passing cloud and high around 23 degrees. It doesn't look like a dramatic weather day, which is sometimes exactly what we want. No fuss, no downpour and no need to carry half the contents of the hallway just in case. Tuesday may warm up again with highs possibly into the upper 20s. In some spots, especially if the sunshine gets going, it should be a mostly dry, though there could be more cloud at times. If it does brighten up, it may feel properly summery again. The kind of day where even the paving slabs seem to be saying, "Hey, it warm." By Wednesday, the forecast suggests a cooler, cloudier feel may start to arrive with temperatures around 20 to 22 degrees and a greater chance of showers or patchy rain. It may not be a complete washout, but it could be one of those days where the umbrella earns its keep, even if only for a short spell. Thursday looks fresher again, with more cloud, the chance of further showers and temperatures around 20 to 24 degrees on how quickly any rain clears and how brightness follows. So after a warm start to the week, we may be back to the classic West Midlands routine, sunglasses in one pocket, brolly in the other, and a firm refuse to trust the sky. By Thursday, sunrise will be around 5:58 a.m. with sunset close to 8:24 p.m. So the evenings are still light, but they're slipping away bit by bit. Autumn isn't knocking just yet, but it may be cleaning its throat in the distance. So overall, it's a warm and most usable August week at first, with Friday through Tuesday offering plenty of dry, bright weather before Wednesday and Thursday being cooler, more changeable feel. Not bad at all, just enough sunshine for summer confirmed and just enough uncertainty to keep it authentically Black Country. As always, forecasts can shift, especially several days ahead, so it's worth checking again closer to the time if you've got plans. But for now, the message is enjoy the warm, bright spells while they're here and don't be surprised if the weather changes its mind quicker than somebody deciding whether they're having orange, chips or a cob for tea. Have a lovely week. Stay safe in the sunshine. Keep the brolly nearby for the later part of the week. And remember, if the weather turns out better than expected, that's not a mistake. That's a Boston little bonus.
Thanks for that update. Next up, we have another block of local news.
The mysterious West Midlands leper well that has survived for centuries. Tucked away beside a quiet country lane between Codsall and Brood, lies one of South Staffordshire's most unusual and easily overlooked historic landmarks. Most motorists pass the leper well at Gunstone without ever realising it is there. And yet this small brick-lined pool has been associated with medieval medicine, local folklore and centuries of history, and is protected today both as a scheduled monument and a Grade II listed structure. The well story stretches back hundreds of years. Its sulphurous water, famous for its unmistakable rotten eggs smell, was once believed to possess healing powers. In medieval times, sufferers of leprosy and other skin conditions are said to have travelled to the site hoping its mineral-rich water would cure their illnesses. According to local tradition, those seeking healing would first receive a blessing from the priest at St Nicholas Church in Codsall before making the journey across Moat Brook to bathe in the well's waters. While historians cannot prove the ritual took place exactly as legend describes, parish records and local evidence suggest the tradition has deep roots in the area. The well was first documented in 1686 by Staffordshire naturalist Robert Plot in The Natural History of Staffordshire. He describes a strongly sulphurous spring in remarkable detail, noting its smell could sometimes be detected from around 20 yards away, particularly during winter or before rain. There is also long-standing speculation that a medieval leper hospital once stood nearby. A neighbouring farmhouse, still known as Leper House, may occupy or lie close to its former site, although archaeologists have never found definitive proof. The structure visitors see today is thought to date largely from the 18th century. Built in an oval shape, the brick-lined well features stone steps leading down into the water, allowing those seeking treatment to bathe rather than simply collect water. For decades, the monument disappeared beneath dense vegetation, becoming almost invisible to anyone walking or driving past. That changed in 2024 and 2025, when volunteers from the Codsall and Bilbrook History Society and Brood Civic Society painstakingly cleared away decades of ivy, brambles and undergrowth. Working alongside Historic England, South Staffordshire Council and Chillington Estate, they restored the site's visibility and installed an information plaque explaining its remarkable past. Today, the Leper Well remains one of Staffordshire's most intriguing hidden landmarks. Although no longer visited in search of miraculous cure, it offers a rare glimpse into a time when faith, folklore, and medicine were closely intertwined. A new drone is being used to scour the region's waterways in a bid to monitor their health. Called SurfBee, it has been commissioned by Severn Trent, which says it is amongst the first UK water companies to try the technology. SurfBee is fitted with onboard cameras, sampling equipment and temperature monitors, and will allow the utility company's teams to better monitor rivers and waterways. This includes being programmed to carry out autonomous missions along the river, which will see it target hard-to-reach areas. The firm said SurfBee could be deployed quickly to help teams gather high-quality sampling data, including phosphate and nitrate levels, which can all be completed in a fraction of the time required by traditional monitoring methods. The battery-powered drone was invented in Australia and allows seven teams to respond quickly to emerging issues, helping build a clearer and more accurate picture of river health. It's fitted with an onboard camera and can be programmed to carry out a sampling mission along a stretch of the river and then return to its handler, who can also operate the drone by remote control. Severn Trent said it was investing £2 billion to improve river health and cut spills from storm overflows through improvements and upgrades, including increasing sewage works capacity and reducing phosphates from the waste treatment process. Gareth Reed, the firm's River Rangers manager, said, "We're one of the first UK companies to use SurfBee, which would allow us to work quicker and more efficiently and help us get into the hard-to-reach areas along the river, places that might be too dangerous for our teams to access. We're really looking forward to meeting customers so they see how our teams and our investment, including in technology like SurfBee, are making a real positive difference to our rivers and waterways."
Blue-green algae has been spotted at Cannock Chase Country Park, prompting a warning to visitors to keep out of the water. Last week, blue-green algae warning signs were erected at Chase Water Reservoir, and swimming sessions were cancelled on Friday. Now, Staffordshire County Council has also confirmed reports of blue-green algae in watercourses at Cannock Chase Country Park. Blue-green algae is a type of bacteria which can produce toxic chemicals that are very harmful to people and animals. It looks like green or turquoise wispy paint or scum on the water's surface and naturally occurs in lakes, ponds, and rivers. It typically appears during the summer months and can take several weeks to clear, or even longer if temperatures are warm and favourable. The County Council is urging all visitors to country parks to stay out of the water and to keep children away from affected areas. Pet owners are also warned to keep dogs on leads and not allow them to swim or drink from the water because blue-green algae can be fatal to animals. Signs have been put up at both country parks to make people aware of the blue-green algae. Hayley Coles, Staffordshire County Council's Deputy Leader and Cabinet Member for Communities and Culture, said, "We've identified blue-green algae at both Chasewater and Cannock Chase, so we're asking everyone to stay well away from the affected water for their own safety. Please don't let children enter the water and keep dogs on leads near affected areas. Dogs should never be allowed to swim or drink from the water containing blue-green algae, as it can be fatal. Warning signs have been put in place, but if you think you or your pet have come into contact with blue-green algae, seek medical or veterinary advice straight away."
Having just heard about the challenges facing our waterways today, from blue-green algae to innovative projects such as SurfBee, using drones to monitor water health, we're reminded that rivers, canals and seas have long captured people's attention and imagination. More than a century ago, waterways inspired one of Britain's greatest storytellers, Robert Louis Stevenson. You may know Robert Louis Stevenson as the author of Treasure Island, one of the greatest adventure stories ever written. And if you know Treasure Island, you probably also remember one of its most chilling characters, Pew, the blind pirate, with his tapping stick, his fierce temper, and his ability to strike fear into those around him. Pew became one of the most memorable blind characters in Victorian literature. Yet while Pew was a fictional creation, the man who imagined him led a life that was itself full of adventure, danger, and remarkable journeys. Robert Louis Stevenson was not a sailor searching for buried treasure, nor was he a pirate roaming the high seas. He was a writer, but he was also a traveller, an explorer, and a man who refused to allow poor health to prevent him from seeing the world. In this special three-part series, we'll discover the real-life story of Robert Louis Stevenson, whose travels, experiences, and determination in the face of ill health helped inspire many of his most famous books. From Scotland to distant shores across the world, his life was every bit as fascinating as the tales he created. So, with thanks to the TNF Soundings contributor Liz, we introduce Episode 1 of The Real Adventures of Robert Louis Stevenson.
TNF Soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello again, it's Liz from East Kilbride. Now, my choice today will be a name known to you all. Robert Louis Stevenson, the writer of adventure classics like Treasure Island and many other books. But his own life was also an adventure, indeed from Edinburgh all the way to Samoa in the Pacific Ocean. So here we go. Now, just to clarify, and this gets some people confused, there were two very famous Stevenson families. One were the family of locomotive engineers in the north of England. The other one, our family today, were the builders of lighthouses. In fact, his grandfather, also Robert Stevenson, planned or built 23 around the treacherous coasts of the British Isles. Our Robert was an only child. His father was a lighthouse engineer. And growing up, our Robert was a very ill wee boy, long periods of time in bed, many, many disturbed nights. And through these disturbed nights, as well as his mother caring for him, he had a nursemaid, the beloved Cummy, who not only cared for the sick wee boy, but also told him stories. Sometimes these stories were very dramatic, even scary, and gave him nightmares, but he was very fond of her because she did basically care for him in times of great illness. Growing up, the family were concerned. Their wee boy, whom they nicknamed Smout, was so ill he had a very erratic education in his younger years. But yet, he could dictate stories. So the imagination, perhaps prompted by nursemaid Cummy, was there from a young age. The family, of course, expected Robert to follow in the engineering business, and the disturbed education did not stop him from applying and being expected and then accepting a place at University of Edinburgh Engineering Faculty, of course. Now, this was not what our Robert wanted to do. And he became, shall we say, a very, very erratic student. In fact, he was quite a wild student because his father provided an allowance. And sad to say, our Robert spent his allowance in the pubs round the university and also in the brothels around the university, visiting the brothels so often that he had a nickname, Velvet Jacket. The photos of the time show him wearing the infamous jacket, and by this time he's grown a rather bohemian moustache. Will he become a lighthouse engineer?
TNF Soundings.
Now, here come the quiz
answers,
and they're brought to us by Mina.
Hello, and here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Feeling confident? How will you score? Let's see. Question 1. In what year was the first film shown to a proper audience? And the answer is 1888. Question 2. What was popular name for zoetrope machine? And the answer, peep show or what the bottle saw machines. Question 3. Where could you see zoetrope? And the answer, on a seaside pier. Question 4. Name another popular movie title used by families. And the answer, A Magic Lantern. Question 5. What was the title of the first talking picture? And the answer here is The Jazz Singer. And finally, what does CGI stand for? And the answer here is Computer Generated Imagery. Did you get them all right? If not, not to worry, as I will be back next week to test you all once again. Bye for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. Thank you for listening. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!